Hey, folks, and welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla live podcast show. If you're listening to this later, well, it's not live. We usually try to do this live about 2 o'clock on most Wednesdays. So for those of you in the chat room, good to see you there. And for those of you listening later, if you want to join us in the chat room, just head on over at about 2 o'clock and ask a question live. And also, if you have a question for the podcast or anything, I try to collect them through Facebook or through Twitter. So keep an eye open for that kind of stuff. No matter what, thank you guys for listening. And let's get right into this week's episode and with some questions. So today is Lion Day. Today is the day that I'm recording this is when Lion came out. And a lot of people are asking, hey, how's Lion? Did you upgrade yet? What's going on? And I just wanted to share a little bit about my philosophy of upgrading and keeping up with software and keeping up with all this stuff. I've always been a little reluctant to upgrade the day of or the week of or even the month of with almost anything, especially a big change like an operating system or a big change with a product that I use every day, something like After Effects, Cinema 4D. There's always new versions coming out. And what I like to do is at least wait until in between projects. So, you know, classic example, you know, you're working on a project, you're working on a client's project or a big school project, whatever you're doing. And all of a sudden, right in the middle, you upgrade and you realize that, well, crap, okay, half the plugins I was using aren't compatible now with the new version. And that one piece of software that you really, really need to get your work done all day isn't updated yet. And it's going to be a couple weeks. And this, you know, maybe I do this because of Pro Tools. Pro Tools was always the worst when I was an audio guy. Pro Tools was always the worst to update. They always took a really long time. So for me, it was really a long upgrade process. I had to stay on an old operating system with an old version of Pro Tools just to make sure I had all my plugins that worked, just to make sure all the projects I opened still played properly. In fact, it kept me from upgrading to OS X way back in the day when OS X started. I was on OS 9 for a long time, only for Pro Tools reasons. And you have to be careful with that stuff. It's like I say, especially if you're working on a project, especially if you're in the middle of something, you don't want to change in the middle. So wait for that moment. At least this is my philosophy. Wait for that moment when you have some downtime, when you have a day or two to upgrade and not be stuck in a corner or have to downgrade or worry about it. Give yourself some time to not only upgrade, but make sure all your tools are updated, all your plugins are updated. And there's also something else that happens when you wait to update. Other people go find all the bugs and problems and incompatibilities, and they go do all the hard work, right? So somebody else is out there that may have more time to update, find a bug, say this doesn't work, you know, my let's say launch bar or default folder X or something that I use every day maybe doesn't work with Lion. I don't know. But if that's the case, somebody's going to say, hey, company, why not make sure this works with Lion? Maybe in a month or so, they're going to have an update in the store and all things are good, right? So that's usually my philosophy on almost everything. Cinema, After Effects, operating systems, anything big like that. It's always nice to wait at least a few days to let the bugs roll out and get some reports from people that are in the field, that are using it, that are working, and find a way to see if everything's running. When I worked at Digital Kitchen, this was really critical because we were doing real jobs for real clients with real budgets, right? And for us to go, hey, there's a new After Effects, an update, and then put us back on schedule a few days meant a lot of money and a lot of wasted time. So there was always a good, you know, 6-8 months to update operating systems, all this stuff, After Effects, 3D packages. Always, it was when we had an extra couple days or we were a little bit slow or one team was finished with a project and we had a day to do it. So that's my Lion situation. I'm going to hear it from the field. I'm going to see what everyone's what everyone likes and dislikes about it. And then when I'm ready and when I know I could do my main machine and my computer and all that stuff, I'll update and move forward. And I think that's maybe not as an exciting a way to do it, but a lot more efficient way to get work done. Let's see here. We got another question from, I think this was on Facebook or Twitter. Man, I should have wrote down the name. I thought it was an interesting question, so I wrote it down here. And it's about how to deal with trends in Cinema 4D or 3D or motion design or anything, you know, in general. How do you deal with trends, and what do you do about them, and how do you stop trends, right? And trends are always around. Trends are like the fad, you know, whatever the new thing is. You know, the classic one was deer and rainbows, right? Back when I was learning all this stuff, it was like deer and rainbows and paint drips everywhere. And it was a style. It was a fad. It was something that everyone seemed to be playing with at the same time, seemed to be kind of a hip thing. And there's two ways you could work. You could either stay updated with the trends, stay on top of trends, and use them to your advantage, right? So you know what's cool and hip, and when a client needs something, you could show them something that's part of the new design or part of the new trend. And that's okay. That works for a lot of companies, for a lot of people. But it's not a long-term solution to problem solving, because you have to not always be aware of a trend and also present it in a way and make it not seem dated after a while, right? Because trends always fall away, right? So after everyone started using deer heads and paint drips and rainbows in their reels and their work, It started to become an anti-trend. It was, you know, screw all those people using deer heads. And then as soon as, you know, you see a JCPenney commercial with some paint drips in it, everyone goes, oh, right, well, that's over. What are we going to do now? And while it could be fun to stay updated on trends and even use them in your work, and it's a losing game in the long run. What I would recommend is that you concentrate more on traditional design technique, things that might be more timeless, things that might be things that your clients might still like and use years down the road, and that's not always the case, and that's really hard to do. But that's the those are things I've been thinking a lot about. You know, how to keep it really simple, and that, I guess that's how I've always approached design and trends and stuff like that, is to try to keep it simple. Now, it's actually happened that by trying to keep it simple, there has been a trend that people said that I'm kind of perpetuating, and that's the reflective shiny ball trend, right? And I'll call them spheres from now on to hold that back a little bit in your brain. But the shiny spheres, right, was keeping everything really simple was a technique that I've been using to try to teach people software without worrying too much about modeling and stuff that I'm not really interested in anyway. I wanted to show you guys some of the techniques, but by using just really simple shapes, cubes and spheres and planes and that's it, and type. And that itself has turned into a sort of a trend in a way, and people are using that to learn and maybe overdoing that a bit. So you have to be careful with it. You have to not only know what the trends are, but you have to know how other people are, how other people and like normal people, I'm using air quotes, I guess, but how normal people respond to trends. Because while you may be sick of deer heads and ink splats, all the kids might love it, right? Maybe that's what everyone else is into. And usually it's the people that work in this industry that are most sensitive to trends. So while you may think the trend is over, every 14-year-old kid in the world can't get enough paint drips and rainbows, right? And you have to be aware of that. You have to know what other people are responding to. And you need to know be able to use that to your advantage if that's your market, right? If your market is young, if your company is hip, right, and they need to be on top of this stuff, then it is your job to know what people are responding to, what's cool, what's not cool anymore. If you choose not to go that way, I would just say stay traditional. Make something beautiful no matter what the trend is. I think that something good looking will always be a trend, right? So make it good, make it nice, make it simple, and I think you'll be better off in the long run. Well, that was the first big rambly answer to a question. Let's check out the chat room here and see if anybody has a question. We got a big group here hanging out in the chat room talking about all this stuff. And let's see if they have anything ready to go. There we go. When freelancing for a post house, this is from Blackbird. When freelancing for a post house, let me see. It kind of scrolled off the edge here. Let me make sure I get this question right. If I can't find it, I'm going to kind of guess. He basically asked if it's proper to sign a contract before you get started working freelance. I would say, yeah, I would say don't start working unless you have a contract if you're a freelancer. The contract should say when you get paid. It should say how much you get paid. It should say how much you work. It should say how much you get paid up front and how much you get paid after the job's finished. It should say who owns the work. It should say a bunch of stuff. A good freelance contract should be the first thing you pull out when they say yes, when you say yes to work. It's not a jerk thing to do. It's not a mean thing to do. It's just your job, right? You have to be you have to protect yourself. Even if you think they're friendly, if you've known them, if you've had a good relationship with them, and maybe you've done 50 jobs with them and this is the 51st. And you know what? You're in there and they're going to sign the contract that night and you get started. Maybe you're comfortable with that. But when you don't have a relationship to go on, when you don't have a history with them, even if it's a friendship history, if you don't have a work history with them, you have to have a contract. I never was a big freelancer. I'm kind of parroting what I hear from a lot of people. I'm trying to think of somebody that you could go listen to or follow to do that. I'm going to go do some researching on that. And that may be an opportunity to have a guest on the live show one of these times, which I've been trying to get together some guests. But maybe we can get a freelancer on here that has been doing it, because I've been getting a lot of freelance questions that I would like to answer, but I don't know specifically things about holds. My buddy Barton Damer was asking about holds, and maybe we could talk about that. Maybe I can get him on here to talk about it, or maybe Mike or something. We'll try to figure out a freelance episode where we can really kind of dive down into the process of doing freelance, right? But thank you for the question. I'll try to get better answer for you next time. The next question comes from Facebook, and it's it says, how do you get paid and get work? How do you get better and take all this stuff that you want to do and get that first job? And I've talked a lot about this stuff in my presentations and when I go speak at schools and even a lot on this podcast. And I keep trying to find an answer that works for everybody. I got an email recently that said, you know, he basically said that he's better. He knows he's better than a lot of these people that have a job in his industry. He's met the people, he's hung out with them, and he knows and he believes that his work is a better quality than all these other people that are getting hired. And he's like, you know, what's the problem? And I think he may be having the second part of the problem. He may be having the meeting people problem, because it really boils down to two things. It's always being really good at what you do. So if you're not getting the job, if you're not getting the work, you may not be good. And that's really something that you really, really have to think about. You have to compare what you can do and what you have done to people that are working in the industry and are getting jobs and are getting paid. So really, really, you know, figure out where you sit on in the how good are you level. But then, of course, if you're good enough, you need to meet the people. You need to be around people that are hiring. You need to be around people that are working in the industry. You need to show people how good you are in any certain way. And that usually means you have to be communicating with people that are in and doing the work that you want to do or are related to people that are doing what you want to do, right? So this could be online. You could do this. You could do this in person. You can go to meetups. You can go to groups. You could help people. You can do a studio tour. What doesn't work is, hey, do you want to hire me? Because usually the default answer is, nope, we're good. Thanks. But if you're around and you're meeting people and you're friends with people and you have beer with them and you help them, you know, set up their blog when they need it, if that's your thing, if that's something you know how to do, then, you know, maybe they ask you if you're busy this weekend, they need help with a project, right? So think about what side of the coin you're on. Are you good enough and you don't know enough people? Or maybe you don't have either of them. Maybe you're not good enough and maybe you don't know enough people. So figure out where you are on that scale and approach the weakest side as hard as you can this weekend or this week, or look for an event or start your own event or figure out how you can hang out with all these people. And not to pimp your product, not to pimp your freelance, not to pimp yourself, but to be there as part of a community. And that really is as simple as I could try to put this. Now, it's really nuanced when it comes down to specific things, that, you know, where you live, you know, how, what your market is what you're good at doing something that people are hiring, right? Are you a character modeler in a town that needs animation that needs logos, right? Or are you a Cinema 4D guy in a town full of Maya companies? There's a lot of nuance here, but really it comes down to being good and meeting the people that can use your talents. All right. Let's see here. Somebody had a question. I think this was also from Facebook about staying motivated. How do you stay motivated? I get this question every once in a while, and it's an interesting question because you could come at it from two different angles. One is maybe you're just burnt out. Maybe you're just burnt out. You need a break. So the one answer is like, get the hell away from your computer, take a break, and come back and be motivated. But the thing to really be careful about here is, at what point is it not that you're not motivated? At what point is it that you're doing the wrong thing? Because for me, if I'm doing something I want to do, I've been unmotivated to do something I want to do. I get it, right? Everyone wants to maybe work out more. But they don't. They're not as motivated, right? But for things like your job that you've been studying and working on and doing all this stuff for so long to try to do, if you go a few days and you're still unmotivated to do the work, you may have to take a step back and think about if this is the job you really want to do. And it doesn't have to be a big deal, like, you know, all of a sudden you're not a 3D animator or you're not a motion designer, you're not a photographer or whatever, but maybe you're just not a portrait photographer, right? So after that third day of taking family photos, maybe you step back and say, well, crap, I don't want to take any more family photos or any more senior portraits. What I really want to do is take photos of, for newspapers or whatever other angle you want to approach it. It doesn't have to be a huge leap or a huge jump, but think about when you're unmotivated, what is it exactly about that job you're doing or that project you're doing that is unmotivating you, that is not making you excited to go do it? And if you have a few of those days in a row, man, really, really be careful about doing more of it when somebody calls. You may want to try some other stuff. I think this happens a lot. And I think this happens a lot where people have an idea of what they think they want to do. And all of a sudden they're there and they realize that this isn't as fun as they thought it would be. You know, lawyers have this problem all the time. How many lawyers get their job and go through all the hours and time, and then all of a sudden they realize, well, crap, I don't want to be a lawyer. You hear those stories all the time, and I think these stories exist in other fields as well. Maybe you're trying to get that job as a wedding photographer or whatever, and then you go do it, and all of a sudden you got your you're doing well, right? You get your eighth day of your eighth weekend of shooting a wedding, and all of a sudden you're tired of this. You don't like it, but you do like photography. So where do you go? So I don't know. You know, I don't know the answer for you is specifically, but think about what that is, and think about what that is, and how you can start to do more of what you want to do if you're really that unmotivated about it. All right. Let's see here. See if we have another question from the chat room. Suspa is asking, how do you deal with potential employers showing interest, then not emailing back? So it sounds like you're trying to get a job or get work from them, and it sounds like they're maybe a little bit interested in work, and then they never hit you back. What it might be is that they're just not ready to hire. So I would just follow up with them and not maybe not say like give an ultimatum or anything like that, but just kind of say, hey, you know, I'm here if you need me. Let me know if I can answer any questions or if you have any anything open or if you want me to come in or whatever. So I would just stay in contact with people that aren't emailing you back, and not in an answer me or shut up way, but just in a friendly way, and just say, hey, you know, any new news on that? And just ask them. Let's see here. I'm going to check out one more question from the chat room. I'm going to do a little refresh on the chat room. And again, you can join us at grayscalegorilla.com/live for the live shows on Wednesdays, where we have a huge chat room today. A lot of people. So I appreciate you guys coming out today. All right. And if you're not logged in, why not log in and ask a question here, guys? All right. I'm back. So if you guys have some questions, hit me up. All right. Element 3D. Somebody's asking about Element 3D, which is a new plugin from Video Copilot that looks really, really cool. I'm not sure if I mentioned this last week, but do check it out. It's called, I think it's just called Element or Element 3D, and it's probably on the front of Video Copilot somewhere, but it's a plugin for After Effects that does a lot of really fun 3D stuff, a lot of kind of MoGraph, dynamic-looking 3D inside of After Effects without a 3D program. And it looks really, really cool. It uses real mesh, real geometry, real reflections, a lot of stuff that is programmed in there. It looks really amazing. I'm really interested to see how that works in as far as workflow and how, you know, getting things like type in there would be a killer app, you know, like to be able to type and make 3D letters in After Effects without having to go back and forth is pretty exciting. For simple 3D, it might be just the thing a lot of After Effects people are looking for. Rather than learning 3D, a true 3D program, maybe all they need is like a little reflective sphere somewhere or some text. So it'd be really interesting to see how that integrates. And knowing Video Copilot, I'm sure it's a great plugin. I really like their stuff. So I'm excited to see more about it. All right. Let's see what we have here. Any more in the... How do you... Prince Mo is asking, how do you deal with saving project versions? He goes on to say he heard Lion got a new autosave function. So when I usually try to save as. Whenever there's, let's say I'm working on a project and I get a good handle on something and it's starting to go somewhere, I'll save it. I'll probably save it earlier, but as soon as I have something worth saving, I'll save it, you know, project name one. And then I'll save the next one, and actually what I do is 01, and you'll see why in a second. And then the next one says project name 02, and I just keep saving as. Every time I get up a little bit more updated. This really works with Cinema 4D and After Effects, where the project files are so small. The project file itself is really teeny, so you can actually save a bunch of versions without too much overhead as far as, you know, hard drive space or anything. You know, you're not duplicating a whole bunch of textures and things like that usually. So I'll usually start, go through project 04, 05, 06, go all the way to 09. And when you go to 10, it automatically is in order. So the reason you put that 01 is so when you get to 10, it stays at the bottom of the list and it doesn't jump up to where the 1 is. So I go, I just keep naming things like that. So every time I make a revision, revisions are a huge deal. Never make a revision and then save over the old version, because it's happened so many times where the client will come back and say, well, I don't like the revision. We just want to go back to where it was. And now all of a sudden you might not have that project file. So, I always do a revision every time I save, new revision. And, as far as the autosave stuff, I think that's really exciting. I think autosave with revisions, the way that Apple's kind of thinking about it, is really the future of operating systems. I think that's how most things are going to go. Now, our side of the business, you know, more technical sides of computer programming and software will always want more control over their autosaving and files. And that's because we may have our own way to do it. But for the main normal consumer, it's going to be really soon where they don't have to worry about file versions. They don't have to worry about hitting save, right? Why not, if it's such a small file anyway, just continuously save, like it sounds like Lion's trying to do. So continuously saving files, continuously going through revisions and doing numbered saving so you can always go back in time. This is the way almost everything is going, and that's the way it should go. I've always thought that computers aren't doing enough to make saving files easy enough. I use a thing called Default Folder X, which saves a huge issue I have with the way that OS X deals with opening and saving files. And what that does is it knows where I've saved files before and offers those folders as an option to save this next file. So by default, what happens is if I go into Photoshop and I save a file, and let's call it, you know, some photo on my face probably. So I'm going to save that file. It's going to be called Nick's face, whatever. And then I want to go into Cinema 4D and open that file into Cinema 4D. So what happens is I go open file, and Cinema 4D, and this isn't Cinema's fault, it's the operating system's fault. The operating system says, well, last time you were in Cinema 4D and you opened something, you opened it in this project folder. And what I want to tell Cinema is, hey, idiot. And more importantly, what I want to tell the operating system is, hey, idiot, don't you know that I just saved a file in Photoshop and that file is located in project number 2? And you're opening project number 1, and that's from yesterday. And I haven't been working on project number 1 all day. I've been working on project number 2. So why are you showing me a folder from project number 1? And the problem is that the computers are too dumb right now. And things like Default Folder X allow me to make it a little bit smarter by saying, oh, we know where you recently saved a file, and we're going to show you that as an option to open it. And oh, by the way, you have a folder that you always save and always open from. Let's say it's a scratch folder or something from my blog that where I always save images almost every day. I have a widget for that now. I could just click and find that instantly without having to go through this whole process. Go back to the hard drive, go to my user folder, go to here. And this is, I think, where a lot of operating system stuff is going to go long term. That's where it should be going. My operating system and my computer should know what I'm working on, what project I'm doing, and it should know based on what I'm doing. If nothing else, I should be able to say, hey, computer, I'm working on this this client project right now for this one client. I'm working on MTV, let's say. And it knows now if I go to save a file that I probably want to save this file in the MTV folder. And so it presents me with that folder first, right? And when I go to open something, it doesn't give me a list of the last 10 things I did from yesterday. It only gives me a list of all the Cinema 4D files that are in the MTV folder. This is how it should be. This is how smart my computer should be. It is too dumb right now, and we have too much dull processing power that is sitting there waiting for nothing. And it's not a processing power issue. It's not a GPU issue. The hardware is here to do this stuff, and it's only software that is slowing us down. It's actually, you know, humans that are slowing us down. The software... the programmers and the coders and the engineers are not keeping up with how fast and how smart our computers should be. And I'm really excited for Lion and the way that they're starting to handle these things, like not dealing with files, not needing to save stuff. Simple things that they've done on the operating system, like on the on iOS. Things like if I'm in the Photos folder, and I'm looking through Photos folder, well, you know what I don't see? I don't see Word documents in my Photos application. And the current system allows me to try to open a Word document in my Photos application, and then it gives me an error, right? Well, what iOS is doing and what it sounds like Lion is doing is saying, well, we're just not going to show you Word documents when you're in the photo application. And we're not going to show you photos when you're in Word documents, when you're opening a Word document. Now, of course, you could still mix and match and do things, but it knows a little bit, hopefully a little bit more about what I'm intending to do and what I'm trying to do. I would actually like to learn more about this. It seems like there's things like the semantic web and... kind of versioning and stuff like that, that some systems are doing better with. And I think Lion's a move in the right direction. And it's exciting. It's exciting to see how this is going to go. It's going to be a long time for us because we're more a technical in our, you know, more of a power user, I guess. I hate that term, but yeah, it's exciting. They're asking what this thing's called. It's called Default Folder X. I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. It'll be in there somewhere. But Default Folder X saves me hours a week. Default Folder X saves me and so much headache. All right. Let's see what else we got here. We're going to check out the chat room, try to answer a few more questions, and we'll call this one a show. All right. Ivan is asking about his new Canon 5D Mark II. He decided it's way too big to carry around, and he's asking what smaller format camera do I recommend? And I went through that too about last year, in the last year or two. I've slowly moved away from bringing my digital SLR everywhere. I literally used to bring it everywhere when I had a photo blog. You could still see a lot of those photos at grayscalegorilla.com/photos. There, when I had that going, when I posted a photo a day, I literally carried my camera everywhere. It was with me on my bike, on work, and it was a D70. And the D70 is a really light camera, luckily. When I upgraded to D700, which I love the camera, by the way, what happened was I stopped carrying it everywhere. And the big reason is because it's so damn heavy. Not only that, but I got obsessed with prime lenses and really big, heavy glass prime lenses. Things like the 85, 1.4 is heavy, dude. And that together with the D700 ended up staying in my apartment a lot more than it used to. And it got me thinking, what should I do? What camera should I get instead that I could carry around all the time? Well, at the time, there wasn't this Micro Four Thirds stuff. And slowly the Micro Four Thirds, the Panasonic and the who made the other one? Dang it. Olympus started coming out with these Micro Four Thirds. And that was really intriguing to me because now what I had was access to a large chip and interchangeable lenses, but in a small form factor. It was even smaller than my D70 and had almost the same size chip and really great lenses. So I ended up getting a Panasonic, G, I want to say GH1, but I always get the GAF and the GH1 confused. The small one. There's a big one and a small one. I got the little guy. And it also shoots video. It's what I shoot a lot of the Campbell and Munson music videos with. And it's been great. It's small enough to where I could bring it anywhere. You know, there's kids popping up in the family now. I could bring it and take really great photos of kids and all this fun stuff and take it around the city and take shots. That's been my main camera. I've really shot more with that than my D700 in the last year. And like I say, it's good form factor and it's got interchangeable lenses. I only use the prime on it. What is it? It's like a 20 or something like that. Great pan. It's like the pancake lens, a little guy. Love it. Love that little dude. So highly recommend it. And the new one has got good reviews too. There's a GF2 that is, there's some controversy around it, but so far I think it's pretty good overall. So I would check that dude out. All right. Let's see what else we got here. Oh boy. Dun, 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 dun. Is NickVegas.tv dead? Shabello's asking about NickVegas.tv. Man, this show's always all over the place. Side note, really quickly, these Q&A shows are just all over. They have so many different topics and different crap. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you guys what you think about this stuff. Is it too scatterbrained or what? You know, I want to know what you guys are thinking because I'm trying to make these focused, but sometimes, you know, my life's not very focused. but he's asking about NickVegas.tv, and I've gone through a big struggle on where to post stuff. Maybe I overthink stuff. Maybe I overanalyze stuff. Maybe I worry too much about crap. That's probably the case. But NickVegas.tv was going to be a place where I could talk more about maybe business, maybe more of the non-Cinema 4D stuff that I wanted to talk about. And what happened was the more I talked about non-Cinema 4D and non-motion design stuff, the more I realized it really was all connected. It's really all the same stuff. And so I just started posting it on Grayscale Gorilla, something like the More article I wrote a few days ago. I wrote this piece called More, and that could have easily, without the last line being on it, that could have easily been on NickVegas.tv about, you know, working harder and about knowing more than your competition and about trying more than your competition. That was the kind of stuff I started NickVegas.tv to talk and write about. And instead, what I've been finding is it's a lot more simply it's a lot more simple and easy to work in my head if I just post everything on one site. And that's what Grayscale Gorilla is. I've slowly realized that, you know what, if you're not interested in the writing, or if you're not interested in you know, reviews, or if you're not interested in the products or whatever, that's fine. If you only want to see some Cinema 4D tutorials, I'll be doing those for a long time too. But I figured my buddy Trevor gave me good advice, and he says, you know, you don't have to love everything on a website. You have to love like every third or fourth thing on a website to keep coming back. And I actually looked at my habits and the sites that I frequently go to, and a lot of sites I still go to all the time, even though they're talking about things that I may be into or I may not be into. But every third thing relates to what I'm doing in such a way, and I like the way that they do it, that I keep coming back. So I started to think of Grayscale Gorilla in that in that kind of context. You know, if I want to write something about, you know, about learning this stuff, you know, something like the More piece, then I could post that. And if you're not into that, that's okay. And you know what? If you are into that and you're not into Cinema 4D, that's okay too. You could ignore the Cinema 4D tutorials and you could just read that stuff and maybe learn about After Effects when I do After Effects stuff, things like that. So I've been worrying less and less about where to post stuff and thinking more of Grayscale Gorilla as just my site. If you like me, if you like me, hopefully you'll like stuff I'm writing about. If you don't like me, you probably won't like the stuff I'm writing about, or making tutorials on, or whatever. Right? There's a lot of my face on the site, and I figured if it's me, it's going to go on Grayscale Gorilla. So NickVegas.tv is still up. All the old articles are there, but I may make a decision really soon to start to put some of that stuff on Grayscale Gorilla, and maybe even kind of change the context of it to be a little bit more designer based and a little bit more creative person based. Because I think that I'll stop rambling soon, but I think that this idea of business being separate from motion design was something that was really important in my head for a long time. You know, I kept thinking all these people trying to learn Cinema 4D don't want to hear me talk about, budgets and iPhone apps and crap. But more and more and more, these things are coming together. The more and more, you're going to have the option to be a freelancer. You're going to have the option to do something fun on the side. You're going to have the option to make an iPhone app that you've always wanted to do and still have a full-time job. You're going to have the option to make a website and learn this and do this. And more and more, it's not just going to be you're going to be the best Cinema 4D guy and that's it. I see that there is opportunity to do more than just one thing. And the idea that you're the Cinema 4D guy or you know, screw it, I'm the Cinema 4D guy is old school. It's the old way of thinking about projects. It's the old way of thinking about hiring people. And the new way to hire people and the new way to think about what your life could be and what you're interested in is to do everything, to try everything at least. So while I feel like I am rambling, and I probably am, Grayscale Gorilla is going to be more and more about everything that I'm into and not just Cinema 4D. I've talked a little bit about this before, but that's this kind of status on nickvegas.tv. It's kind of dead right now, but there's some good stuff. If you want to go search it, it's still there. Right. Let's do one more question and then we'll sign off for this episode. And let's see what we got here. Oh, man. I love when people spam the chat room. That's so fun. That's so fun. Oh, boy. Let's see here. When you... I got to find a good one. It's the last one. All right. I got to... One more. Last question is about, I'll do two more. The last one, second to last one's about the City Kit. He's asking when the new City Kit will be out. We're going to have a new version of the City Kit really soon. It's actually been in the works for a long time. It's been almost done for a long time. I just have to package it up and get it out there. It's going to have a few more fun things, actually. One is that you'll be able to clone cities, on any shape. So you'll be able to not just have a flat square city, but you'll actually be able to make, round cities and cities on hills and cities on donuts and a bunch of fun stuff like that. Look for that soon. I'll definitely be pushing that as far as on the site when it's up. I'll be showing you guys all the new fun stuff. I just got to make videos for it too. Last question. Let's get one more in here and then we'll call it a show. In the meantime, people are asking about 5 Second Project. I will have one of those soon as well. Matthew is asking the best advice to overcome the fear of failure. And I'll give you two answers on that one. One is go listen to a podcast called Back to Work. I think I recommend this podcast almost on every show. It's been my favorite podcast for the last a few months now, and they pretty much talk about fear and failure and those things separately and together pretty much every show. And there's a lot to say about it, because the fear of failing and the fear of doing the right thing and the fear of doing the wrong thing is what drives a lot of decisions. It's what drives a lot of habits. And the best way to think about the fear of failing is to imagine what would be the worst thing to happen. What is the absolute worst thing that could happen if you fail spectacularly? And then sit with that and really look at what that is. Look at where you will be. So let's take an example. Let's say, I'll give you two examples from kind of my life recently. One was leaving my job. I had a full-time job at a place I liked with people I liked, doing work that I mostly liked. And I wanted to take some time to concentrate and work on the website and do more 3D and do stuff like this and hang out in a chat room with you nerds and do podcasts and stuff. And I realized that I needed to quit my job to do that. And that was a full-time job with benefits, with health insurance. You know, it paid my bills. I got paid. And was doing well. I was successful in the job. And I figured, what was the worst thing that could have happened? Well, to me, the worst thing that could have happened was that I left and I hated working for myself. I hated doing the blog full time. I got sick of it. And then I would go maybe try to get my job back at my dream job, and they weren't hiring, or they were maybe angry at me that I left, or they wouldn't hire me back. And I figured that would kind of be the worst case scenario, right? As long as my arms didn't get cut off, I can go screw around for 6 months or a year. And I gave myself a year to do this. And at the end of it, the worst that could have happened was that I could always go get another job somewhere else and get benefits and health insurance and do more After Effects work, you know, which is what I got paid to do. And that wasn't so scary then. It really took away the fear, and it took away the consequence and the chance that I would be, you know, screwed up. Like, I'm doing a really bad thing by trying this certain thing. And once you realize that you can usually, you know, once you realize you could, you're usually just kind of back to where you started. If you screw up or fail, then you realize that you're really not, you don't have to worry too much about it. So let's say you submit something to a contest, or let's say you do, or you try to get a job from somebody, or you submit a pitch for a client, and you're afraid, or you have a speech you need to do in front of a bunch of people. I mean, really scary stuff for a lot of people. The worst thing that could happen is that you're kind of back to where you started. The worst thing that can happen is nothing good comes from it, and literally the worst thing that can happen, and I'm channeling a linchpin again, which I tend to do sometimes. But in Linchpin, he says, you know, literally the worst thing that could happen is people will laugh at you. And that's tough. That is something tough, right? You may go up on stage and pee your pants, and people might laugh at you. And that, you know, should you be scared to go on stage because you might pee your pants? Maybe. But really, that's the worst thing that can happen. After you get back, and after everyone writes their article about how you peed your pants on stage, there's really not much else different about you or your capabilities or what you know, what you've learned. You just kind of go back and you read about all the articles about people making fun of you, and you come out and you do something else. And you have to be comfortable with that stuff. You have to be comfortable with screwing up. It's something I'm struggling with a lot. You know, there's a lot. If I fail, when I fail, when I screw stuff up, when I don't do a good job on a tutorial, when I have a typo, and when my colors aren't great, and when my font isn't kerned properly, I fail very publicly recently, and you get a lot of feedback, and it's tough. It's tough to deal with, but at the end of it, I personally realized that I haven't lost anything. I haven't gained anything other than more knowledge. And more knowledge, good or bad, is always better. Knowing how people feel about what you're doing is always good. Even if they're mistaken, even if they're right or wrong, even if they're doing it, you know, to be mean or doing it to be nice, more knowledge is always better in the long run. So get your ideas out there, get the feedback, fail publicly, and move on. There's something there. I'd actually like to think more about that, because there's a lot to tease out as far as failing publicly and being comfortable with it. The real key is to stop listening to me, because I'm not the best at this stuff. Go read Linchpin and go start listening to Back to Work. And I would say that. All right. that's a good way to end my show by telling you a bunch of other crap to go listen to. That's way better. Thanks as always for showing up and listening to the podcast. You can subscribe to iTunes and leave a review if you like it or hate it. Give me some feedback. I always like that. And hope to see you on another podcast really soon. Thanks everybody in the chat room for questions and everybody on Facebook and Twitter that submitted questions. It's a big help for these Q&A shows. So thanks again, guys. I will see you in another podcast soon. Bye, everybody.